You still want me to get water? I didn't do that this morning. I guess we didn't
keep it clean. Well, I think we can do it in the next time.
Yeah, maybe. It's better. The only thing with one room, what are we going to put everything in the room? It's like across the...
I think we will discuss these things at 5 after the 2 sessions of today.
Actually, you know what, I have to go get Athena, so I have to leave at caucus. So we'll come back, probably, the only thing I'm not sure, I think she wanted to stay and do something, that's going to do some work, but I don't know, but hopefully I'll come back. So, I don't know if this is what we find.
Maybe well, we need some. So you just can buy some points of water, of mineral water, gas.
I like those better, much more. But you want the small ones or the bigger ones?
We want the bigger ones.
So we can pour them into little cups.
Just sell the connection. Just be doing the big bottles to the people and then they can wash themselves.
So they need little cups. Yeah, of course, I'm already strong. But when I'm thinking... You would notice that that big?
I thought about 1 liter or...
1 liter? Okay, that's fine. But the other thing is, should we not get them for each day rather than for 2 days? I just don't know where we store them.
Yeah, that is one of the points where I think it's better tomorrow, because I hope I told Ray that we need a separate room we can lock, so we could just put them in the lock.
Oh, okay.
I'm not absolutely sure she managed to.
Yeah. I'm fine to bring them on 2 different days, though. I don't mind. Yeah, it's fine. We don't need it today. That's easy. But I'll do when I go get the female, because that's why I have to leave. I'm going to go get her, but I can get water while we're out, because I'll get my fire and we go. So, but I'll get, for tomorrow, maybe, for 5, how many do we need for tomorrow?
Well, first session is scheduled for 9.
Yeah. I see if I can get
to set up.
I'll be bringing you some and Athena, so I'll just make sure we go to bed early.
Yeah, I think this is something we don't have.
Somehow you have to rest.
Yeah, good point. Oh, but I forgot them. No, I know what I'll do as well. I have a list of restaurants. Do we have access to making copies here? Maybe not, right?
Ray has her bureaus in this program.
Okay. It's kind of January is like a museum. In that case, I'll bring it because I realized I didn't bring it this time, but I'll get it. And I was going to make a list of places, another place, maybe on the back side, of the kind of places to visit that you can have in touch. Like on something. Well, I think tonight, if you want to go to Curry Mile, it's very easy to get to.
This was planned for Sunday, and maybe we can do this today also.
I don't know that. Oh, in that case, I'll get my list of restaurants. More people have access. Because it's a very good one, and they're near here.
Okay.
So everyone can find places. And then I'll make another list of places to visit, because there's a very good art gallery on campus.
That's why some of our goals are not.
We need to get more people to help people come and lunch together.
That restaurant, they still be perfect for that because they're literally places you like. The other thing is, there's down.
The problem is that 1 hour lunch breaks.
It's really short.
Maybe we should have a list of takeaways or something. We should have a recommendation that we can send people to.
Subway,
but for some, we tried Subway, but we have tried to make an order, but they weren't really prepared for something. There are 50 people or
so. Yeah, but there are different places, but it's just a question of whether they're open on Saturday. The museum has a cafe, and it's right across the road. You know what the Manchester Museum is? Literally across the road from, like, if this is this building, the University Building, the Manchester Museum's here, they have a very good cafe. You have to find out if it's open on Saturday.
I think we need some takeaways or something like that, where people can get quickly.
Yeah, they can get there and take away sandwiches. Yeah, definitely. They can do it. Actually, Blackwell is a bookstore down the road, also has a cafe built in Seaford. But I mean, I think if people kind of go to those three places, then there won't be such a cluster.
Yeah.
There are many places. I mean, there's going down the other direction, there are two sandwich shops by the bar as well. There are so many places. It's just a matter of making sure they're open on Saturday. Do you want me to find out? I mean, I can do a little when I get an email, obviously, I'll do that. It's fine. As I say, I have to go get one anyway, so I'll do a little as well. Does that work?
Yeah.
Do you want me to make a list of those places then for tomorrow? Is that more useful?
I think it's good.
Okay.
So people can be sent to these places and they don't walk around and ask for something else.
It'll take way too long. Okay, no, that's fair enough. Well, that's good. I can do that. And then bring tomorrow how many bottles? How many liters?
I thought about 100 liters for the whole conference.
Yeah.
Tomorrow it's most likely to be a very long study. Yeah.
How big is a crate?
Well, I don't know, this is the right English term. Where 12 bottles are usually.
Okay, and the size is, I'm just confused,
that?
A liter, I think.
A bottle of a liter, 12 of them.
There must be places, like,
needle
or something. And then if you want to put an honor system box next to it, is that what you wanted to do?
Well, generally we have fun.
You can't take the principle.
Shops which serve this and where you can say, well, I take A with me and what I do not need, I get back. You don't have to pay for that.
Yeah.
Anything like this existing before?
No, help me! Of course not! No!
That's a country. That's for God.
Okay, that's fine.
You have to spread it. Okay. Free.
And do you have a speaker in that room? Okay. I think we didn't have it up.
What?
We didn't have it up there. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Metrolink to Eccles. Metrolink is the tram, the local tram, to Eccles. It's quite easy. For instance, for Manchester Piccadilly. Manchester Piccadilly has a Metrolink station. All the Metrolinks are going to, and then you need the destination to Eccles.
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 Is the Metrolink closer than Piccadilly?
No, I don't think so.
So you have to walk up
the I think there are also buses, but we walk. I think it's about 15 minutes. 15 minutes walk.
But I came in by the bus from the old station.
And you have to meet at Salford Case. Salford?
Yeah.
Case. Q-U-A-Q-U-A-Y-S. Yeah. It's easy, you will find it. Just before you arrive at Salford Quays, you just pass the ETA project. It's very easy to find. And I have to go there also, so maybe we can go together.
And Jäger also. When I call them, it's not such a problem.
Oh, okay.
They said at the airport they wouldn't accept any luggage in any hotel which is not free and full.
Okay.
I'll just make a short
call,
maybe you can wait.
Okay. So, well, I just stopped. No problem. Someone, I mean, what Yeah, hello everybody. I would like to start now. Just some information before I really start. We will have an introduction to Ökonux and P2B Foundation, and also the official opening tomorrow morning at 9. So if you are interested in what Ökonux is all about and what P2B Foundation is, then you should go there. I think it is really interesting to go there, and maybe you will understand some of the things which I will say in this talk a bit better then. I have found a presentation helpful, but I will introduce myself. I'm Stefan Merten. I founded Project Ökonux in 1999, so this is nearly 10 years ago. I'm working as a software engineer, and I have been into politics for, 20 years now, about 20 years. And so when I saw free software, I thought, this is something very interesting, even on the political side, and this was the reason for me to found Ökonux 10 years ago. Now we are doing, I'm really happy that it worked out that we have our fourth conference here in Manchester. And I'm now giving you my main talk for this conference. Okay, my main talk is titled Current Limitations of Peer Production and Ideas on How to Overcome Them. I have a short outline here. First, I would like to explain where the power of peer production comes from. This will be a few slides which will be very important to understand where the power of peer production comes from. Then I will talk about the contemporary basis of peer production. If you ask where are the limitations, you need to know where is the basis at the moment.
Then I will talk about contemporary limitations. This will be the first part of the talk. And the second part of the talk will outline some ideas on how to overcome these limitations. These ideas are more or less, well, I had them during the past months. And this is maybe only the start. The start to have ideas how to overcome these limitations that I will outline. These limitations are seen in different aspects, and I will we'll talk about different aspects then. Okay. So I will start, where does the power of peer production come from, actually? I think one of the sources of the power is openness. And when we say openness, then we mean actually two kinds of openness, two sorts of openness. The first sort of openness we talk about is what we call external openness. That means that everyone may use the results of peer production without any restrictions. If you think of free software, then the licenses guarantee that you can use the free software without any restrictions. If you think of Wikipedia, you can just use it. There are no restrictions. This, of course, implies that the results are available without any conditions. This includes that you don't have to pay for them. That's a bit of a complicated topic, but basically most of peer production, or most products of peer production, are free. What is allowed here is are conditions to keep the external openness. For instance, if you look into the GPL, you will see that you have to license your own stuff, which is derived from GPL stuff, by the same license. So this is a condition on the use, but this is a condition to keep the external openness. The other sort of openness we have in peer production is internal openness. Internal openness simply means everyone who wants to may contribute to the project somehow. For instance, in free software, you can write a program, or you can make bug fixes, or you can even have some wishes to the project, to the software project. Say, well, I would like to have that feature. That is a sort of openness we don't have in capitalism, for instance. So the first criteria I see for peer production is openness in these two ways. The second criteria is something which I call Selbstentfaltung. Selbstentfaltung is a German word. We looked for an English word, but we didn't find one, and so we just stick to Selbstentfaltung. Selbstentfaltung, what is Selbstentfaltung? Selbstentfaltung is more or less having fun, but with a perspective on the whole, on the society. I think you will understand better. First, there's the Selbstentfaltung of producers. What they do when they work on a free software project, or when they write a Wikipedia article, is fun for them. This is part of their Selbstentfaltung, what they are doing. They are not forced to do that. And if they are not forced, they are volunteers. They are doing things voluntarily. And also, they are not alienated from the production process. They control the production process. They manage the production process as it is good for them. So the producers are not alienated from the product, because this is the product they want to make. This is what they want to do. So they just do what they want. And an important result of this type of Selbstentfaltung for the producers is that you have something like absolute quality. If it is your baby, if it is your thing, then you want to have to do, and you want to make it the best thing on earth. There's something different if you have competition. If you have competition, then it's sufficient if it's better than your competitor. Here you have absolute quality. People strive for absolute quality in peer production. We also have, this is also part of Selbstentfaltung, we have unalienated products. The products which come from pre-productions. So pre-production are products which are not alienated from the users. They are made to make the user happy. This is something we call use value-based production. It is the goal of the production is not to make exchange value, but to make use value. And this is also how we substantify them. In other words, you can say, well, this is freedom. Selbstentfaltung ultimately means emancipation, where you have the freedom to do the things you want to do, but also with a perspective on the responsibility for the whole. So we have two criteria for peer production. One, the first criteria was openness, and the second criteria is Selbstentfaltung. And where the power comes from is actually that we have a new mode of production here. We have powerful products which are very successful. The internet, for instance, would not be thinkable without free software. Wikipedia is very successful. We have complex products. You know, operating system, for instance, is something which is a very, very complex piece of software. And this is done by peer producers. These products have a major societal impact. As I said, the internet would not be thinkable without free software. And we have global news. These are all characteristics of a product which are not so common to other products. We have powerful producers also. They are happy. They do what they want. What is better? And because they are volunteers, they cannot be forced. They cannot be forced to do anything. If you try to force a volunteer, you will just leave. So we have powerful producers because they are free. What we ultimately have is a new mode of production. And a new mode of production, and this is probably the first time in history, is really able to undermine the stronghold of capitalism. Because the old mode of production we have in capitalism is still there, but we have a new mode which has proved that it's able to deliver goods, and to deliver goods in a quality higher than what is possible in proprietary production. I will talk about that particular point more tomorrow. what we see here is a new mode of production, and it is undermining the stronghold of capitalism. So the power really comes from this new mode of production. Okay, so these are the things I wanted to say about where the power of peer production comes from. Now I want to talk about the basis of contemporary peer production as we see it at the moment. I think one of the important bases of peer production today is the internet. The internet is a technological basis. It enables peer production in various ways. It enables peers to find each other. If you would like to produce something, if you would like to have a product, you just go to the internet, just go to Google, for instance, and Google for some keywords, and if you are lucky, you find the project you are looking for. Or if you, it enables peers to work together. Production, and especially production of this type, is a very communicative process, and the internet enables people to work together by the internet. In free software projects, it's very common that people don't meet each other, never. They just know them by their email addresses. Totally common. And of course, the internet is also a major distribution channel, for all the information goods which are produced by peer production. So the internet enables peer production, and what is interesting is that the internet and the computers are today part of the common infrastructure. Nearly every household, at least in the West, has a computer and has an internet connection. That is, you have no extra cost to engage in peer production, for instance, for free software or for Wikipedia. You can just use the computer you have already. And this is even on an industrial basis. I mean, the computers which are used in companies are no different from that what you have in your household. They are just the same. It's just the same technology. So the internet enables free production and is available for everyone, more or less. So I think we can conclude that the internet and computers are the technological basis for peer production today, but they are also the technological basis for peer production today. So what we learn here is that this new mode of production I talked of actually has a technological basis, and there are many signs that without this technological basis, peer production would not have come about. So we might have to have more technology or different technology to go a step further. The other important basis are still volunteers. This is the human basis, more or less. As I said, peer production is done mainly by volunteers. In Wikipedia, that's completely clear, but also in free software. If you look at studies, you study how many volunteers are there, you will find that there are still more than the half of the free software developers are volunteers. And they do that in their free time. There is some peer production which is done in pay time, but this is only possible where peer production can be monetized by secondary effects. For instance, in free software, you have sometimes companies which do services for some type of free software, and at the same time they are contributing to the free software projects which are they servicing, but the source of the money for them is the service, the services they sell, not the product they are servicing. Or at some in some instances we have peer production which is sponsored by the state. If I think of open access through science, then science is largely, at least in Europe, largely sponsored by the state. And then the results of this science are open access, then you have state-sponsored peer production, if you like. Also, it is important to note that peer producers are often highly skilled. I mean, to write software, you need some skills. To write a Wikipedia article, you need some skills. If you do science, you need skills. And even for a project like OpenStreetMap, I think you need some discipline to enter all the data into the right program. So what we see here, what we can conclude, is that the free time of skilled volunteers is the human basis. We have the technological basis, the internet, and we have a human basis, and this is the free time of skilled volunteers. These are the two things which I think today are the basis of peer production. Now I'm going to talk about the limitations we see at the moment. One, of course, is the availability of machinery. The internet is, of course, a wonderful tool for information production, but it is also limited to information production. Some products need something like expensive machinery. If you see a production plant where cars are produced, then you have a lot of machinery which is expensive, and some products just need that. This also applies to some information products. I think it would be very interesting to have an information product about the asteroid belt, for instance. But actually, there's no exploration mission which is going to the asteroid belt because it's very expensive to send all these spaceships there. And so there's an instance of an information product which would be interesting to have, but it is very expensive to get this. In science, we have this all the time. So the availability of machinery doesn't only apply to physical products, but also to information products. And unfortunately, expensive machinery is not simply available, like the internet. As I said, the internet is available in every household, more or less. This expensive machinery, we need to produce interesting things, interesting physical things or interesting information products, are not simply available. This, of course, limits the types of things which you can produce by the production. Machinery is the one thing, and the availability of skilled volunteers is the second thing. If we would have more volunteers in gear production or for gear production, we would simply have more labor force, and this would result probably in more products. Also, the diversity of Selbstentfaltung could be used better when if we had more volunteers. Selbstentfaltung is a very individual thing. What is good for one person is bad for another, and so there's a lot of diversity here, and we could use that better if we had more volunteers. Also, we have of course the problem that also fuel producers must earn money. They are still part of capitalism. They still make a living from capitalism. They have to. And because they need to earn money, they are not fully available for their staying power. So the availability of skilled volunteers is limited by the need for them to earn money. Another thing is that there are tasks which are hard to understand as Selbstentfaltung. There are necessary tasks to produce things which are boring or dangerous or dirty or somehow unwanted. And they are hard to see as Selbstentfaltung. I think what is not a problem is a difficult task. A difficult task is really a nice challenge for the new masters of that topic. Capitalism has the ability to structurally force people to do every task. Capitalism pays people to do every task. We don't have that option in gear production. Force, be it structurally or a different kind, destroys Selbstentfaltung, and this, as I said, this is one of the criteria for gear production. So, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, we don't have force available to force people to do every task. I don't think that physical products are a principal limitation. As I said, information products are based on a certain technology, on the internet, or if you take it a bit further, on digital copy. Digital copy exists for 60 years, and it is common for 10 or 20 years now. Before that time, digital copy didn't exist, and it was hard even to distribute information products. You need big machinery, for instance, to print things on paper. Today, you don't need to print things on paper, just put them in the internet and they are just available. But information products are based on digital copy, and this is only available since a few years. Today, the means of production for physical products are, of course, not simply available. They are also less universal than computers. Computers are very universal machinery for processing information. Today, the means of production for physical products are still not as universal, or at least some of them, not as universal as computers. And of course, they are not part of the common infrastructure. There are no means of production, no machinery where you can build arbitrary physical products which in every household. They simply do not exist, at least not on an industrial level. I think physical peer products will exist when their preconditions are met. That is, when the machinery is available somehow. Somehow, how this somehow is managed is a different question, but I think there's no principal limitation here. Okay, so much about the limitations I see. Now the second part of the talk is going to tell a few ideas I had about overcoming these limitations. So I will start with the limitations of machinery. Well, for machinery, for information production, you can think of sponsored machinery, which is sponsored, for instance, by the state, like in science, for open access. And if you look at the history of free software, you will notice that free software also started in universities, so there was also some sponsoring from the top side. There can also be sponsored machinery to manufacture actually the designs. That is, if you have a design for a car, for instance, then you have only a design, which is an information product, but you don't have the car, which is designed by that car. For that, you need a manufacturer which actually produces the product. What already exists are a thing which is called contract manufacturers. These are manufacturers you give your design to, and they produce the actual product for you. I mean, you have to pay them, of course, but after all, you have the product you designed before. they have the expensive machinery available, and they sell it on a rent basis, if you like. there's also the possibility that standard industry produces peer products. There are trends to ask the users more what the users of products want, what the users of products modify. If you're interested in that, you should look for the work of Eric van Hippel, who's doing very interesting studies on this. And you see that even in free software, you have more or less standard companies which distribute free software. Another thing which could overcome the machinery limitations is cheap and or universal machinery. As I said, computers are universal and they are also cheap meanwhile. That is the reason why we have everyone has one. But cheap means they are easy to get. Universal means that they are useful to have. Useful to have because you can produce a wide range of things with them. similar like a computer for information products or a car for transportation issues. You can use a car for a wide range of transportation issues. Some of you may have heard the term fabbers. Fabbers are production machines which are quite universal, which can do quite interesting things, or 3D printers, for instance, are very similar. Or even industrial robots. Industrial robots are not limited by their design to do specialized things. They can do virtually everything. These are very universal, and if you have a universal product, it may be expensive, but it may still be interesting to have because you can do very many things with it. also, if you look at the history of free software, then you see that they followed a strategy to build the means of production from the ground up. They started with editors, compilers, operating system. These are the very basic elements of a computer system. and so they started with the basics, and on these basics, step by step, complicated or complex products like for instance, a graphic program or something like that started to emerge at some point. Maybe this strategy is also useful for machinery to produce physical things. Another way to overcome the machinery limitations is might be more sophisticated technology. More sophisticated technology, of course, addresses a lot of problems. It may lower cost if you have more sophisticated technology, we may need less work than before, so we have lower costs. With more sophisticated technology, you have cheap, might have cheap or universal means of production. If someone invents a machinery which is similar to the computer for information, but for physical things, then you would have something like that, a universal machine which can process matter in any form. But this would be a more sophisticated technology than we have at the moment. Also, more sophisticated technology may reduce unwanted tasks. So you just give it to the machine and it does it for you. And also, it may be possible that with more sophisticated technology, you can enable Selbstentfaltung for tasks which are not Selbstentfaltung before. Because Selbstentfaltung is a creative thing, usually, and more sophisticated technology might shift what needs to be done more to the Selbstentfaltung side. Well, in short, this means more automation. More automation would be a way to overcome the machinery limitation. So that's the limitations of machinery. There are also some limitations of what I call Selbstentfaltung. And here we come to, I think this is the only slide for this one, to expand free time. I said one of the bases of peer production today is the availability of skilled volunteers and of the free time of skilled volunteers. So if you expand free time for these people, then you have more volunteers and you have more peer production. One idea would be something like an unconditional basic income, which is probably from the state. However, I think an unconditional basic income destroys actually the basis of capitalism. And then, because of this, I don't think it will happen. So it is an idea, but I don't think it will be. It will happen at any time. of course, to expand free time, you can lower the average labor time. This is, of course, a demand which the old labor movement has to lower average labor time, and also the old labor movement. Demand higher wages. But this time, these higher wages and this this less labor time is not just for pleasure of the workers, but to help a new mode of production emerge. That is very different from what we saw before. Also, we can use, of course, the results of peer production to lower the costs. If you use Linux, for instance, then you don't need to pay Microsoft for a crappy operating system, and so you don't need to work for the money you have to give to Microsoft. What we see here is also a positive feedback side. If you use more peer production, then you can also work more for peer production, and you have a cycle here. This is a slide I want to speak. Okay. There are also some things which we can use from capitalism. But the one thing is that we can learn from capitalism. tomorrow I will tell you what a germ form is and how a germ form develops. A germ form theory describes how change comes about, how development happens. And what we can learn from capitalism is how did capitalism overcome feudalism? That is a very interesting part of history. And we can learn what needs to happen that a new mode of production, like capitalism at that time, overcomes an old mode of production. also what I think is useful if we focus on the strengths of peer production and not on the weaknesses. There are a lot of people who say, well, peer production is not able to produce physical good. That's true at the moment. I said that I don't think that it's a principal limitation. But there are a lot of strengths, and I think we should focus more on the strengths than on the limitations. Capitalism has done this always, so this is something we can learn from. We can also learn what functions a modern society needs. We've seen capitalism, a lot of things which need to happen to make a modern society work. And when I think of a post-capitalist society, then I think of a society which is at least on the level of civilization we have at the moment, and not backwards. These functions which are necessary for a modern society are implemented somehow in capitalism. We have to learn what are these functions, to replace them with counterparts from peer production. Some of them might also become superfluous, like banks. If everything is for free, then you don't need money. And
like prostitution.
Prostitution.
There's no money. It's no longer prostitution.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Also, something which capitalism is very good in is to produce ideology. Maybe we can just produce some ideology that peer production is something which is sexy to do. It's great to be a free software developer, it's great to be a Wikipedia author, something like that. Also, we can leverage capitalism. For instance, I'm going back to state things. The state or the government sets up policies which make peer products like free software the rule. Then you have some public recognition. In Germany, for instance, we have a public policy that every part of the government has to use free software if possible. Practice is a different thing, but at least we have this policy. I think this is a step forward. And also we need to use capitalism for what is still good. For instance, we should try to make capitalists produce the things we need. Okay. So I think this was the last slide, yeah. Just for a short summary, I told you some criteria for peer production which need to be met by peer production projects. I told you about what I think the contemporary basis of peer production, which consists of technological things and of human things. The limitations which I see at the moment basically result from the lack of the means of production. And there are some ideas, as I said, these are some very early ideas, on how to overcome these limitations. Thank you for your attention. I would like to draw your attention to an initiative we started in Equinox some months ago. This is the Drawing Board Initiative. Equinox, for a very long time, analyzed peer production, and now I think it is time to go to the drawing board and to think about how a society based on peer production can look like and what we need for this. This talk is a part of this initiative, if you like.
So it's not about painting drawing board, about drawing something?
No. It's like an engineer's drawing board. Okay. Yeah, thank you for your attention. We now have left half an hour of discussions, and Christian will help me with this.
Hello, Christian Bowers. I'm wondering if your description of the software community is not based on one particular phase of the development. because when the software community becomes successful and starts, you know, institutionalizing itself, there seems to be a very particular template which comes into being. And basically it has to do with you have some free volunteers. In Linux you must have 75% of the volunteers are not volunteers, they're paid. Paid programmers, right?
In the Linux kernel.
And so it depends on different projects, but when they are successful, what we see usually there's a community with free volunteers going in and out of the marketplace. Sometimes they have a job, sometimes they don't have a job. If it's successful, there will be a business sector around it that actually provides for the employment, and which allow them to do, if they are successful, very similar work to, I think that's the case for Linux.
For Linux kernel.
Yeah. And then you have a foundation, right? And this seems to me a template which is sustainable because it actually answers the question of income. Which, if you only talk about free volunteerism, then income cannot be a full model of production because it's a kind of parasite, it's a dirty word. You know what I mean? It lives off something that which already exists and makes it possible to have free time and volunteer. Second remark, I think when you say that it's not possible physical production, again, I think I'm wondering if that's not, that was true a few years ago, but today we have Arduino, Bug Labs, we have a list of about 150 projects. And again, it's a very similar structure. They have a community, they have a company, and usually there's a foundation that's involved. I don't think that's the case with the Arduino community, I don't think there is a foundation. But you know, it seems to work in a very similar fashion. You have people either pay the volunteers developing the commons, there's a company making money with it, and because they kind of send back an amount of money back to the community, and eventually the foundation, it makes the process sustainable and able to grow. And to me it seems that this is like a basic template that we can witness in operation in many parts of the world.
But is it sustainable in the long run? Could you participate in the news, doing what you fancy, then going and spending the other part of the day, in a slave? Could it be sustainable in the long term?
Well, that's what we've been doing all the time. I mean, if you're a free volunteer, that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, but
it's working a job and then it's working for somewhere. Well, it's sustainable in this society, it's sustainable. It's not perfect, but it's...
What do you say?
I mean, it sustains the activity, right? Now, the basic income, and this is my last comment, I'm not sure it's totally incompatible with capitalism. First of all, there's many capitalists, people who believe in the market that are for basic income. And you have a wide variety of proposals around the basic income. And usually neoliberals and free market advocates propose a low basic income and people on the left propose a higher basic income. I think it undermines some of the aspects of capitalism because it actually just kind of destroys the free market for labor. Right? Because people have basic income, so therefore they are not going to make the same choices than if they really have to sell the labor power. So in this sense, I think you're right to say that it's not realistic today, but I'm not sure it's actually fundamentally unrealistic. I mean, a lot of things that we ask, like universal suffrage or the welfare system, were equally utopian at the point, you know, where the social movement were asking them. But after a big crisis of the system, World War I, universal suffrage, World War II, welfare, so I can imagine even after this meltdown, when you have 30-40% unemployment at some point, that you know, the basic income might actually become a realistic idea. I'm not sure, but I think you're too radical in saying that it's totally impossible. I think that's enough for...
Well, about the free software projects which have paid people, I think Linux kernel is indeed an instance where you have a relatively high high percentage of paid people, but the Linux kernel is also a very, very specific kind of software. Because the Linux kernel is the glue between hardware and the software. And hardware is produced by companies. And the companies have an interest that their drivers are going into the Linux kernel. And that is a reason why they pay people to make that driver become part of the Linux kernel. And so the Linux kernel is really, it's an interesting example, but it's not very typical. In other projects, you don't have this effect because you don't have the strict linkage with the hardware. So if you take the Linux kernel, you have to be very careful. Also, when I look at this laptop, for instance, some months ago, I checked, this is an Ubuntu laptop, and I checked how many packages are there. I think it's 500 or 600 or something like that. And these are all free software packages. It's absolutely not thinkable that all of these, or at least 50% of these, are paid. Yeah, most of them are volunteers. You don't hear from these projects because you as an end user are not into these basic things, but they need to be there. And I think, and also there are studies which say, well, at least half of the free software producers are still volunteers. But, regular studies made by universities. So I think this is actually, they are paid producers of free software. It's also an interesting question what this means, because if you are a company and pay someone to produce free software, then and you have a living community, then the community influences the company and not otherwise. And this is also interesting, but it's just a footnote. About the other projects which you mentioned, I would love to see them on the reference list, please. Very interesting. As far as the basic income is concerned, I wrote on purpose unconditional basic income. And of course, there are a lot of ideas about basic income. And you have to specify what basic income really means. What I mean by basic income is to have an income that I have at the moment as a software engineer or without working. And I think this is really not something which is going to happen in practice.
One would add
that
it's also for everyone. I mean, personally.
Yeah, unconditionally. Yeah. If you don't like to work, then you just don't like to work, but have a really decent income to have a living from. I think this won't happen. It will, it might be happen to, but then it would not be unconditional, might be happen to replace all the social security stuff, to just make it easier for the government. Things like that might happen, but not for instance for me. And then you have to be very specific what this income actually means.
I disagree. I think that there's an underlying economic model that is creating the environment that you're reacting to. For example, I'm a Drupal employee. I work for Drupal. And Drupal is web. Drupal responds to the standards of the web. I think that business standards, connectivity, security, data security, for example. These are the things that create the environment that hardware manufacturers build for, that software coders write to. And those things permeate every aspect. Every manufactured component, every piece of data, everything. And it takes examination to discover those underlying standards. But that, in my sense, at least in my estimation, is the reality. The timeliness of the underlying complex manufacturing equipment. Yes, those are issues, but people still need to build houses. There are standards in every country, economic unit, community, about what a house is. If you're going to develop a product, or you're going to develop a movement, or you're going to develop some kind of service that is powered by peer production. It responds to the standards of what's present in that particular local economic community. I mean, trying to build, you know, plastic houses in a place where only concrete ones work isn't going to work. But, you know, that's a standard. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not plastic machines are available. It's about building to the correct standard in that environment.
That's to produce, according to that standard, you need the machinery.
Yeah.
If you want to build a car or a mobile phone or what you like, you need to have the machinery.
I think that, again, that's more of a timeliness issue, where, you know, free software went all the way to the top. You found the interface where the standards, you have the market, you have the standards, you know that we need open hardware and open software. Linux blooms. All of the downstream, Apache, you know, everything else that's, you know, Drupal rides far on top of that step, right? I mean, it's like ethereal, you know, it's almost like a passing blip on the radar compared to Linux, but, you know, that's a plastic house compared to a dirt house. So you still need the base stack, which is plastic extruders or bioplastics or something like this, and those are things that are getting made. And they have to follow the same orientation. And we're looking for the standards. We're sussing out right now what are, you know, like a standard of, it takes less than 30 minutes to get to work. Okay? If we thought of transportation, or how do we tackle open source transportation as the standard of people don't want to drive more than 30 minutes to get to work? That's the standard. It's not whether there's roads for cars, or whether there's track for trams. It's what we're building to an economic unit standard of transportation that returns a benefit, that has people reinvest. They don't care what system provides it. That's the synonymity with capitalism. We can use that. They really don't care who makes it. Just because my values are higher or more complex than other software programmers doesn't make me a better service provider. It does, however, make a really complex system that is highly adaptable and flexible so that I can compete bar none with any of the other CMS providers on the planet. I know that will happen with plastics extrusion as well. Mm-hmm. Especially when it's so widely distributed that all of the capitalist closed systems just can't compete. It's about where the underlying issue is. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot more faith and hope to be had, but that sounds unrational. It sounds irrational for me to say that. There are standards. The standard may not be what you think it is. It's like people won't travel more than 30 minutes to get to work. If you make an open source car, nobody will care. But unless you can get to work in less than 30 minutes.
That's my point, more or less.
No. The point is that people do not want to work basically like slaves, if I may somehow. I mean, this is my understanding of the presentation. People derive so much more pleasure when we work in something like Linux without bosses. Than when we go, you know, sitting every morning at 9 o'clock, you know, 5 and so on and so forth. So this is a standard also. To the extent that the majority of people are people that they don't like, they don't enjoy work as they did in the past. And we would like to change this with something else. Maybe Drupal, maybe some other kind of, you know, semi-paid arrangement.
Well, I think one of the...
I do that. Did I mention that I do that? Make all of my money with an open source and I only work 10 hours a week for capitalist assholes?
Just a very short answer.
But
I think
because you also enjoy it much more than
another job. The point is it works and it does make money and we can do it with our work too. We're doing it.
I think there was some...
The lady in the floor had another mark, I think, first one.
I actually two questions, and maybe that goes into your point you're making. Can you go back to the positive feedback lower costs by using results of peer production, positive feedback side. Isn't that just the business case?
And in which way?
In a normal capitalist way, it is cheaper.
Yeah, it's of course a business case for capitalists either. That's true.
So isn't there a synthesis between capitalism and peer production?
No, I don't know. Well, capitalists use peer production, of course. They use free software, of course.
And yeah, and that's how they get lit by the community.
Yeah.
So it's the other way around. I don't think that capitalism is creating, as you say, the basis for it. It's the other way around. I think open source and peer production enables a new way of doing business, a new business model, which is cheaper, more fun to work at, faster and innovating. I think it's capitalism reinvented.
Which is quite exactly that. I would say, public capitalists, I would say this is great, because they're doing all the work for free, and they're producing content, and then encourages people to buy hardware. In connection. Even better, because you can connect to utopia for freedom, which is even better. You so can, I think you have to be conscious that the competition that's being set up between free software and capitalism is if I was a rich capitalist, we would certainly see that, right? We would see that something to be quite good.
Yeah, I will talk about this particular aspect more tomorrow in the introduction to economics, because indeed capitalism is not really opposed to peer production. You see it when for instance IBM says, well, we want to use free software, we want to make it part of our business model. So there's no strict opposition. There are some groups like Microsoft which don't like free software, but there are other groups which do like it. But this is very typical for what I called jump on theory. This is a step in a five-step model. And so, no, they are not opposed to each other. Okay.
I'll leave the second question.
Happy afternoon.
You can go ahead.
Please try to be short with the question because there's only 15 minutes left.
I know they didn't get it. Just wanted to say something about your remark about the strengthening or revolutionary capitalism, kind of 2.0, 3.0, something like that. The public feedback cycle could have a completely different meaning because it could be completely demoralized, which means that it could really be a cycle of people designing each other. And that
especially training in meritocracy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the most powerful ones in my own system.
I just want to ask, how did the question come to society work? Because you know, everything was free. Not everything was the same. Like, I've got a big computer that's pretty different than I can see. I think it's a really nice small computer that costs three times as much to use.
The interesting thing in your question is that you are talking in terms which may make no sense in peer production, like cost. I don't know what cost means in peer production. I mean, in capitalism, it's clear. It's the labor which is part of the product you are using. But what is in peer production? I have no idea. In fact, that is one of the interesting things to think about. The concept of cost, what does it mean in peer production? Does it exist after all? And as far as the distribution of things is concerned, I think if you look at free software, and I'm using free software because it's the most visible and the biggest peer production phenomenon at the moment. There are other peer production phenomena, but free software is certainly the biggest one and also the phenomenon I know best. So I'm drawing samples from this. If you look at free software, then you don't have a problem because people just freely choose what they want to use. I mean, there are millions of editors, for instance, of text editors. People just choose what they want to use. You don't need a mechanism to distribute these things. They just take things, what they need. Because we have the technology for that, yeah.
Spend 30 minutes to learn, but all the big ones are just always going to happen.
more than it costs.
It costs more, yeah, whatever this means. I mean, what we have when we, if you have a high level of automation, that might be not a problem anymore. I mean, maybe you have environmental topics or something like that, which can be seen as cost then. But these are costs which are not calculated in capitalism either. It's really an interesting question, but I think the really interesting thing is, what does cost mean?
Yeah, on the scarcity and the sort of the surrounding problem, what is it related to capitalism? So if you had a subject, would you have the same?
I think I can give an example. So what I think works is that we have two different logics, the logic of field production, where you voluntarily contribute and it's universally available. And then we have the logic of the market, where you need to invest in physical things and sell them, you know, and get money for the reproduction of the system. Right? So if you take Arduino, we see the two systems working together. You have a company which makes these circuit boards, and it's an open design, so meaning everybody in the world can pre-produce designs for Arduino, right? And this is pre-production, but then Arduino makes them and sells them on the market. What changes is that every other company in the world can use a design and make the circuit board because there's no copyright. So the example they gave, which was really interesting, was that companies in China take the Arduino circuit boards and sell them. But because they don't have the contextual knowledge of having worked on it, they actually produce substandard circuit boards, which makes people that buy the Chinese version come back to Arduino and actually demand it is made in Italy on the circuit board as a guarantee of quality. So I think it's useful actually to make a difference between the market logic of Arduino and the capitalist logic of the system, yeah, which is infinite growth, copyright-based monopolies and all these things. And Arduino is a market...
And keeping up scarcity.
It's a market logic.
Keeping up scarcity. Without scarcity, you can't sell anything.
Yeah, the scarcity is the physical thing. That's it. So the design, this is brains working together. That's infinite, as long as you have computers and a network. But the making of the circuit board, it's a physical thing needing, at this time in history,
at this time, yeah.
a market... based logic, right? The thing is, there's a new dynamic because the community around Arduino has demands on Arduino, which changes the way these companies behave. Because if they don't behave in a manner which is acceptable to the community, then the peer production aspect of it collapses, and Arduino is just a company like any other, which has to pay everybody to make it better, right? So I think the strength of it, the system, is that it combines both interests. And then if you go back to your example of feudalism, and you can even go back to when slavery changed into serfdom, right? If you were a slave owner in the collapsing Roman Empire, and your neighbor start liberating his slaves and making him into serfs, they're more productive, they have families, they have wives, they have children. And they can keep fitting the assembly production, so you don't need 1,000 soldiers, you only need one member to discipline them. Well, these people were more productive, but it was also good for the slave. It was good for the slaves, which became more free, and it was good for the slave owners, which became a domain holder, right? Mm-hmm. Similarly, in feudalism, when it starts collapsing in the 16th century, those nobles that started investing in capitalist enterprise were more successful than those that didn't, because those that stayed tied to the land with feudal obligations just disappeared. Today, I think we arrive at a point where it's more interesting for smart capitalists to invest in Google and eBay and YouTube, which is the sharing of, and then more like Arduino, which is just starting. Because, you know, once you have an Arduino, where the whole community is improving it all the time, well, who else can compete with that? You can't. Right. So, and this is the strength of peer production, that even within the current logic of capitalism, it's a superior model of making things. And, of course, to the degree there's no political, you know, coercion to make it impossible, but given that it's a really interesting model, which at this moment combines both logics, a market logic for the physical and a voluntary logic. But as we learn, you know, we can change things. For example, Arminianism is a good example. There is a, you probably read that, there is a shop called Nicolas Antipasto, which sells electronic goods based on Arminian circuit boards, right? And they notice they have difficulty to develop certain things. So well, they open a bank, open source hardware reserve bank, which is based on the 70 people put money in the system. They don't need a bank. So pragmatically, these communities are developing alternative infrastructures, which coexist with the system, but in my view, and I can agree, because they're more productive, in the end, you know, are the seeds of the new in the old, and they grow eventually. Again, if the whole collapses, and the new is strong enough, then that becomes a new model that people will adopt.
Yes, I want to say something that perhaps you will mention, but what could boost their production to capitalism? It will destroy intellectual value. In the end, that's what it's their production boost to capitalism. For example, if Linux succeeds, we get to go down. It's capital and we destroy it.
This is not going to dump, we made so many billions.
Okay. He has a long way to go.
The value put in Microsoft would be zero value. So, if this happens, capitalism will be restricted to materialism. But what is the other thing that will happen? That we don't have enough energy, we don't have enough steel, we don't have enough materials. So, if we succeed, and big production goes over intellectual property, capitalism is limited. And it's capitalism cannot grow. It will not survive. That's it, what Marx said. Hopefully. That's the point. So what if we succeed destroying intellectual value, capitalism will be destroyed?
Yeah, that's
why it doesn't have more drastic than before. In Europe. Then.
Because it cannot grow. Now it could grow going to intellectual value. United States is the only country that earns money with copyright. You can't balance. All of the world is putting money in the United States with intellectual property. If we destroy intellectual property, we may take away from people a lot of money. And this will happen without capitalism. They cannot survive without growing. They cannot grow in material stuff. They cannot grow in intellectual capital.
So you,
we have been revolution.
What you are saying is that the pre-production may make the crisis stronger.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but maybe that's a good thing.
So we don't have much time left, so I think I agree with the general, and maybe we can have two everybody now on the list, and then Stefan makes one final step by, and then we go searching for you and the general. And you?
I want question, do you really think that old people want to do just what they like?
Okay.
I know you want, I know I want that. Most people that sit here want it. That's a great question. Yeah, value exists based on that. And I don't think you should talk about cost, but about value. Because fair production works in networks of people who think the same way, right? Not everybody is the same way. The market, the capitalist market, works the same way for everybody. So how do you make something like this work for everybody in the same way? Probably don't know how to do it.
If it's small countries, okay, you can choose between all these tax editors, but most people just want a tax editor that works. And they will really pay for that.
Okay. Anybody else?
Well, yeah, no, this is a question of what is just an explanation. So we have to include this whole discussion on the peer production of the tax editors. I've been working as a consultant in Copenhagen, giving advice to companies about this stuff. And I see a trend in a lot of companies in Denmark, in particular, where they tend to go from seeing their primary product as the main source of their income to the infrastructure of their product. We have a big shipping line called Maersk Seafood. They're talking about actually dropping the rate, the shipping rate on certain containers over the globe, and then make that money on foreign clients on the particular group. Just remember, I heard they asking from Microsoft, saying we're not a software company, we're a platform company. I think we can see, I mean, a lot of them hybrid, what we might see as a hybrid product will be put on the token, download, and then so we make money on the infrastructure, which is on the data, which is the server infrastructure. And a lot of them have a lot of companies, some companies are actually shifting their spending from making money on the product to making money on the infrastructure or alternatives like Google's apps and to the product. Maybe peer production and cancer is going to change.
Okay, as far as some of the tactical aspects of physical production, in my talk at 2:30 tomorrow, I'm going to talk about 10 very exclusive tools that can get about 99% of the physical production that we have around us. So, I want to do more about that. There's very real solutions that are on the board. Let's do something where you should happen.
So I only have one reply, and I think this is the reply to the question, how do you make sure that everyone wants to keep reduce? Well, there's a theory behind Selbstentfaltung, which says that Selbstentfaltung is in the nature of the human. So this is a complex theory, and I can explain it here. But it is. But if you look at it in a practical way, I think there's really nobody who can be on vacation for a year or so. People need to do something which is useful for them, at least. And the question whether there are enough people to produce all the things which we need is, of course, a good question. But I think there will be enough people who like it to make useful things, to do useful things, and to help others. This is part of human nature. So I think there is a chance. Okay. Thanks for the interesting discussion. It's perfectly what we wanted, this conference, and have a nice conference. You're next, okay.
Yeah, I think so, right? Totally sure.
Yeah. Oh no, I have to decide which one I want to attend.
This one, I think.
Maybe.
Around here?
How is you?
in the ground. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just come over here.
Oh, you have it there.
Is your cable long enough?
But you have to. Yeah, I'll put the monitor here.
Monitor. My laptop is just for recording.
Okay.
You didn't read the session.
No, I'll introduce myself.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
But I think you have just care about when you talk, which is pointing to you.
Okay.
And during the discussion, you just turn it around so it points to the, okay, to the audience.
Yep. About myself.
Okay, so I just announced.
Yeah, you can do that. But you can, yeah, you can also introduce me as designer of.
Hey, Mike is still.
I think it is. Still, yeah. I'll go to the toilet.
Thank you.
really daring about coming in here.
Yeah.
And fire so bad. You should have put it on the table.
I don't really see the
country. No, me either. I don't know why my actually my capitalism is right into it.
Yeah.
I didn't like something, I didn't know what it is, but it's really, 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 really.
Just on the other sense. So, you know, if you can have an automated back-end internet-based system which can do the computations, then spit back. I mean, it's a trade net. It's being set up.
We're going to start in 5 minutes.
That's mobile.
It's a good time to grab the computer.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, they're kind of, you can only upload commodities, and it's uploaded sort of being a wish to buy a commodity.
Okay.
For the reason, you know, I think actually having, that's just the sales sort of point they're taking care of then. Whereas there is the whole sort of agricultural thing that's going on to get to that point that I think
needs
to be addressed.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's a good idea. Yeah, looks like for a bit, maybe how, because it's a bit of crowdsourcing combined with open source.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it for the car too, because it's really hard to get funding for these kind of things. You have to get it from other resources.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking that ostensibly we've got Vodafone just bought out Carmichael to the largest network provider. So, I mean, if you can negotiate, so basically you could add money onto the text message.
Yeah.
So if you could actually make your money to run the system off the text message itself, and that way the network could expand and pay for itself if that, because the way in which you operate the network would be, you know, paying for it as you went.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I can see the system operating. Then obviously you need costs that are flipping low. You are only sort of taking an order for
you should look at how you can source it locally and maybe not need to do it with text messages, but radio.
Perhaps radio. I mean, the only
just radio to the next station. Everyone does it. You get this wireless number. I know it's glad you have set it up in Leiden and Netherlands. That's called Open Wi-Fi or something.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of one radio station running in slums in South Africa, like a community radio.
Okay.
People have to actually, to make it work, they do have to learn the environment. So I mean, I think that's your strength of the mobile, where we have that immediate two-way communication.
Yeah. You could do without, but then you are in the total of the project, because you can set up a network peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
Just, so you don't need, if you have a mobile phone, I have a mobile phone, but one that's enabled to, we can call to each other, but I can also call to her, and I call through you.
Well, what would be between us would be the AC. So if you...
Well, it doesn't necessarily need to be.
No, not necessarily, but in order to get her number, if you don't need to come to me, you just need to upload your sort of request, and then because it knows that she has what you've got, then she can her number, and that...
They are doing research, and I know they're quite far with it, so that you can search, basically what you say, peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
So I mean, central server. Still, if you have one central peer that has all the numbers, then still you can use the whole network, so you call any number within it. So that's easily arranged.
But I suppose even difficulties on the sophistication of our mobile. Generally, if you want to get cheap mobile,
I think it's practically the same technology. I mean, probably. Yeah.
Putting the system on here.
Yeah, I think you can actually use that. You can actually call each other without any masts between them on landline. Well, simply as a whole stalking.
Oh, I see. Yeah, they have that. I've seen as a mistake with a barcode.
But you can also, and I don't know what network you did with wireless internet.
Yeah.
One guy had the internet.
Yeah. The other's connected.
The other's connected to him, and people connect to him. It's not fast, but it works. And for a simple data, it's great. That's how the internet works.
Yeah.
Actually, the only thing you need is an open standard.
And more people are interested in the bureaucracy thing.
Yeah, I think so. When MS came as well,
someone else is coming,
we'll just start a bit.
And that's definitely I don't know why they have to.
Sorry, can we start?
If you would like to continue now, I don't know why there are so few people interested in the open source. carbide anyways.
I think we should continue the conversation outside.
So before we start, some quick announcement. I think we will need about 1,000 or more for the conference. So if everybody gives about, so there are about 50 people, I think, in addition to the speaker. So if everybody gives more or less something in the amount of 20 pounds or 20 euros, it should be fine. And yeah, it's the official part, but of course it's your choice how much or how much to give. And now I'm happy to introduce to you Jaco Lammerts, one of the main designer of the open source car common, and he will talk about open source car.
That's a hidden side of mine. Stefan asked me to talk about Common. Common is an open source car. It's not the first one, actually. The first one, I think, is Oscar. In Germany, there is an initiative, I think, started in 1999 to develop an open source car. But as far as I can see, it didn't develop much further than a sketch. This car is actually built one-on-one, but doesn't drive yet, and we try to do it this summer. And the thing what I have done, and that's what I want to talk about today, is I graduated from this project. There's a project started by Society for Nature and Environment, which is an odd party to start with. And they asked the three technical universities, University of Technology in the Netherlands, to develop a sustainable car. That's where it started from. So they just thought about, well, we have this Volkswagen Golf, how can we make it sustainable? So they thought, well, it will run on less fuel. I'll show you why that's not sustainable at all. But today I'll talk about Common as in what I graduated on, that is not directly the car itself, but why it is open source and how you can still implement it in the context of the world today. I'll first introduce myself a bit, so you have an idea of who I am. And then I'll talk about that part sustainable, which was the assignment. And sustainable is a rather difficult word and it's often used differently, so this is what I think is sustainable. Then I'll talk about the context of the world we are in today and tomorrow. We thought about 2020, which is still far away, but it seemed to go more rapidly towards us than, I think it's now 2012 or something, maybe today already. And then how Common fits in that future, how this mobility concept fits in that future, and what it means for you as a user. About me, I graduated on this this project, but I'm a petrol head since I was born. The first words I could say was auto, car in Dutch. And my mother pointed, I asked my mother from the back seat of the car, which car is that? And she told me it's a Fiat Punto, and then after a while I knew them all. And that's how it all started, and I wanted to become a car designer or an inventor. Well, I think I didn't become both, but I did try it for a while. That's why I started industrial design engineering as a study. This car I designed, for example, it was a winner in the Michelin Challenge Design 2005. And it was in a Detroit Motor Show in 1-4. So it's this big. Looks very big here, but it's not that big. And it's actually inspired by the dog of Paris Hilton. I don't know its name, Tinkerbell, I think. But at that time, the celebrities, movie stars, drove a Prius. But a Prius is a very boring car to look at. And it doesn't really show your environmental, the car. It doesn't really show. So I thought the assignment for the contest was design a car for California. Hollywood's in California, so I thought, how can I design a car that really shows you that you are sustainable? But not only that, it does act that way. So I thought about the dog called Paris Hilton that still shits in the room. It's a dog, it's nature. So what do you have? Someone else also has a dog, and you have a conversation about, does yours also shit in the room? What do you do about it? And does he barf at strangers? And that kind of stuff. And so this car behaves the same way. It has rear wheel steering, so you really have to learn to drive with it. You go left, you go first a bit to the right, and then you go. And all these kind of things. It's got real ears and stuff. Okay. I've been mad in this car, but it already had some things, some ideas that developed later on in common. This is in 2006. I blog at groenweg.nl, this sustainable car website from one of the bigger car magazines, Auto Week, I think they're here in the UK also. And since 2004, I work with open source software as a small company that does build websites, but now we mostly design services. So we really use the way open source communities work, and especially type of 3 community, to deliver services to our customers. That's about my background. The background of the car is to follow, but not before I discuss this car. This is the Volkswagen 1 liter. This car consumes 1 liter of fuel, I think it's liter, on 100 kilometers, which is very, very good, you'd say. So it's a very environmental friendly car, it's very sustainable. No, not at all. This is what they thought we would design. But if you look at this car, it is made of carbon fiber on a magnesium chassis. This is, magnesium is scarce, scarcity exists, it's very expensive, and it's very energy, it costs a lot of energy to get out of the ground and to make it into a tube, for example, or a tubing frame within here. And after its life cycle, say you would drive it against the lamppost, you can throw it away, you can reuse it. So it's not that ecologic. It will never make good its fuel efficiency in its lifetime. You have to drive like a million kilometers with it, and still it has consumed so much energy and it will make so much impact on the environment, it will never make it right. And if you look at it, it's a bicycle, you sit behind each other. No one wants to have this car. Even if this were available for a normal price, you put another car next to it, the same price, and people will choose that one. Because you sit next to each other, you can move the dog in and stuff like that. This is just sort of a motorbike. There are 3 people in the world that want this car. If they could afford it, it is $1 million to build. And even if you do it very efficiently, it will still be more expensive than any similar car. So this is not the answer. This is not sustainable. What is? What is wrong with the car industry? What does go wrong? Well, this is my opinion, so I'm not an expert. I'll leave it to others. But what do car makers do? They take a car, as it is built in 1908, I think the biggest inventions were done in 1926, 2 big inventions. And after that, all cars were kind of similar, apart from one that I'll show next. But they took a car and they will make it better. And better means bigger, safer, more powerful, and it's brand new. Take the Volkswagen Golf, for example. You take the Golf, Golf 2, bigger, Golf 3, bigger, Golf 4, bigger, and it is heavier, and the cars are built actually in 3 things. Perceived performance. Every Golf has more power, but it's also heavier, so it's more faster. Perceived performance. Perceived quality. How big are the gaps between the door? How well does the plastic inside look? Doesn't mean it's better, the car, although they have become a lot better. But there are numerous examples of cars that look very quality, look quality, but they aren't. And they are made on purchase price. People look at what it cost me to buy it, because they sell these cars.
And then they do one brilliant thing wrong. That is, we are designing a new car for production, never, never for production. A wise man said. And this wise man designed this car. So that was the other invention I was talking about. This wise man saw that the other cars in this time were bigger, just to give you an example. He saw there are smaller families now, and they will live in urban places. And they will have a need for a big pool, but it should be cheap to run, especially. And you should be able to park, and you should be able to just fit another kid in, and that's it. It should be three people, somewhat three, maybe four people. So I designed a car that was very simple, and it was the first car that had a transversely placed engine in the front and front wheel drive. 85% of all cars now have this. The other invention was by Edward G. Budd. It was the point weld with sheet metal unibody frame. 95% of all cars have that. That's the way cars are built now. And Ford was, of course, one of the inventors of mass production. And then you have it. But this guy really looked at how does the world look now or in a few years, and what do people want within that? What meaning does a car have? And I think the meaning has changed also. Now this car is a yuppie car. People that are single, maybe have a girlfriend, mostly guys, but also women that are single. The new Mini, you know probably, is a yuppie car. The environment, the world around the car changed. This means the meaning of the car change. That is something we try to do explicitly. We started not with the car, we started with what does the world look like? And we started in 2020, look forward, which is a bit far, but now in my normal day job, I do it for 2015, for example, 2014, and but it's doable. And we said, well, which are three, four factors that are important? And I'll first discuss that before I discuss the solution. And it should fit in that context, and then you might get a car. So we might not talk about a car, but about mobility. We talk about automobility, your own transportation. What does the world 2020 look like? I don't know. No one knows. It's very hard to predict anything, especially the future. But what you can see is now some interesting large factors that have an influence. One of them is information technology. It has slowly evolved, and now we're at a point where almost everything is possible with information technology. Your refrigerator can call the supermarket if it's empty, order new stuff, and it will be in there. Information technology will solve it, actually. The thing is that people do not use all this force yet. They have to adapt to it. This is a slow process, but now we're in the growth of it. You see that the kids that grow up now, they know how to use a computer well. I was working in DOS and command line, and they know how to use it. It's easier to use it. They will use it. How does it change the lives of people? How do they work together? Well, what you see is that they can now instantly satisfy and cluster their demands. They have some interests, for example, I like this kind of cheese, and my refrigerator notices that, can make alliances with others that also like the cheese, and buys the cheese cheaply, especially from that farm in Italy where I want it from. That can happen now, and I don't even have to know these other people that like that cheese. The refrigerator can do it for me. Well, we know Last.fm maybe, which is a music taste thing. Well, I cannot push play and it will play radio the whole day and there's not one song in it that I don't like, which is great. And I don't know all the people that have made it happen. So it works in a non-social way, although it's social software. But also, you get to know these people through this software, through this way. So people also know people from Manchester now. I'm invited here because you could find me on Google. That's something that happens because this information technology. Otherwise, you might want to have a phone book or something. I don't remember how we did it, but That's something that has changed. And that will also change the way we will move. That's what it's about, change about mobility. We will move more frequently, probably. For example, second-hand sales. In Holland you have Marktplaats. That's a big site where everybody can put his old junk on and others will buy it from you. It has introduced a 20% rise in leisure traffic. So you now have traffic jams on Sunday afternoon instead of just only in traffic jam time. So we will not move less, we will even move probably bigger distances, because the need for personal contact will remain for the coming years. The other big cluster of factors is economizing sustainability. Sustainability, just talk about it, is ecology, social, and economic factors, and a balance between those. What you see is that if there is unsustainable behavior, for example, you are using a lot of oil, and oil becomes more expensive because there's more demand, and there's the same amount of it, so you get this value of it, and that becomes more expensive. That's how it works. Other things are regulations. If you emit toxic fumes, you have to pay for it now. If you want to sit in a traffic jam, in the Netherlands you want to have this tax on sitting in traffic jams. But if everybody wants it, then it's not fun anymore, so we should tax it. But what you see is that every unsustainable behavior, on an ecologic or on a social behavior, parking in the city, everybody wants that, so it's more expensive. They make it an economic incentive. How does that change the icon car as we knew it? A lot. Cars become more expensive. There's not the freedom that you had. Because my brother and I recently got his license. You cannot pay anywhere without park anywhere without paying. You try to drive on the motorway, you're in a traffic jam. It's not the freedom that it was. And he cannot buy a car at this moment because it's freaking expensive. And let alone he can drive it because it's very expensive to drive one and own one, etc. So that changes the icon car for the future generation, but also for the people that are driving it now. And as I introduced myself, I'm a petrolhead. I don't like this. So what are we going to do? We're going to design a new holy cow, the new car, new icon car. No one can do that alone, except maybe Alec and Sinclair, the designer of the Mini. But that's why we tried to use the force of the community. That's not only why, it's also intrinsic sustainable. We're going to come in a new way of developing cars, manufacturing cars and using cars. And let's not call it cars anymore, but just mobility. Let's start with development. Open source development. I think everyone knows what it is here, which is not the first, but what it stands for in this case is that you put the blueprints of your car online, everyone can use how he wants to use it, doesn't matter. Maybe for non-war purposes. You might want to add that one. But it is an open source license. We're actually now in the process of building one or using one or creating one because there were not really good open source hardware licenses available. But any other license is basically you can get the codes, but it should stay open, as you explained in the previous. So that anyone changes it, develops it further, we ask him to at least give the guys that get this car, also get the blueprints of it. So with that, you need a whole new playground. It totally changes the game. What happens is there's now a difference between an Alfa Romeo and a Volkswagen Passat. And the whole difference is in copyright, or in patents in this case.
So you choose an Alfa Romeo, I choose for a Volkswagen Passat, based on the product of the different. If you play open source, anyone can make this common car. So if you offer it or I offer it, you can still choose between us. What's going to be the difference between us? What's the value? And that will be in the services. I don't offer a car. I can't make money by offering a car. Just as well as I cannot make money by offering open source code and just distributing it, yeah, maybe distributing it. That's already a service. Now, the car is a means of transportation. It is mobility. So you enable people to only make money on mobility, which is intrinsic, so it's more sustainable. As I explained before, cars are now built to perceive quality, purchase price, and perceive performance. In this case, you would actually build a car that would be more fuel efficient. Because I give you a car for 3 years, for example, you drive it, but I pay the fuel. And you pay one fine or one bill every month per kilometer you pay to me. So I have an incentive to make it cheaper for you. I have also an incentive to make it more fuel efficient. There's an incentive there. That also changes the way you're going to build cars, because you want to optimize the car to do this. So you're not going to build it to have a low purchase price. No, you're going to build it to have a low value depreciation. Which means I give you a car for 3 years. After I get it back, and I'm very happy because you treated it right, and I'm going to take it apart, throw away the exterior, because that's outdated after 3 years, the interior, also outdated. You make that from material that degrades exactly after 3 years. You can just throw it in the garbage bin, or in nature. But other parts, like the air conditioning, which doesn't change a lot, and as it changes, you update it. That goes back to the remanufacturing factory. There we update it and it gets back into a new car for you. And you, every 3 years, come back to the factory and we measure you and so we make a car that is made in your specific demands. That's something current manufacturers don't offer. And it's even cheaper. And you want to have less cost to use. So low fuel costs, also low costs in, for example, insurance. Current safety systems are not implemented, or they are implemented, but they are called comfort systems, because a car manufacturer doesn't want to be responsible for the effects of the system. Mercedes-Benz has a system that can brake by itself, and then you don't have an accident. They put it in as a comfort system, because if it does make an accident, Mercedes-Benz is responsible and accountable. In this case, I would be the one that made the car and lease it to you or rent it to you. So I would be responsible either way. If you make the mistake or the car makes the mistake, same insurance. So there's an incentive again to make it safer on the road. And that's how you actually use these context factors. I just noted the economizing sustainability, to use a community, or economize sustainability to make it more, economize the sustainability in this system. But also the controlled network society, as I mentioned, you use the power of a community to develop something, to go further than the regular car. How does that change how you behave? Yeah. Hope this works at once. Mm-hmm.
Is that your model?
Yep. This is a short animation. It's in Dutch, and you can probably read it, so I'll just show you. It is a bit of a showcase. It's not real, but your computer awakes you a bit early because it rains today. He knows you're going to go to the Amsterdam Motor Show today, and he knows you're going to go by car, because he calculated that from all the other options you have, for example, by train. So it's going to be a bit more crowded on the road than expected, so he wakes you a bit earlier. You go to your agendas in the morning, and you plan your trip,
And he asks, for example, okay, so we're going to plan into a platoon on the freeway. So we're going to work together also on the freeway. And okay, we'll also make the parking surface alright. Can you drive on your bike to the car that's parked elsewhere because it's cheaper? And after that, you just drive yourself to the freeway, and on the freeway you decide to do some work. Well, as we saw just now, the car actually puts you in a platoon. So you meet these guys on the freeway. You actually went on the road a bit earlier to get in. This is not a technology issue. It can be done since the 80s. But this is intrinsically a good service, because now you can do some work. And you as a free software developer can here do another job. You have more free time, here you have it. Or your employer says, well, that's good, your accountant, we can send another bill in the hour you're in your car. And the parking service, well, you just exit the car and it will park itself in the way that these puzzles will work. You can get two times as much cars in this parking lot, so it will be cheaper. Or it will be more near the center, for example. And you can actually let something, and that's a feature that you would actually enable by doing the hardware right. You could deliver something in the car, which you can read on the way back, or eat in the way back, while it's parked. So on the side of the car, and that's what you saw in the... this is going to be difficult. So on the side of the car here is a box, community box as we call it, and you can actually deliver stuff from it, or maybe sell stuff from it, we follow up. So that gives you an idea of what services you could provide by changing the hardware. And in that way, it becomes a business model, but one that is intrinsically more sustainable. So what's next? Just a summary of what would be the thing that you would use. Every 3 years you get a new car, which is normal for a lease business, but the total cost of ownership is 25% less, somewhat approximately that, and your ecological footprint is at least 25% less. So this is a good business proposition, actually. This car will be on display again on the Amsterdam Motor Show. It's starting this Tuesday. We have some new things. This is the river display that's in it, from students. It's mostly a student project at this point. It's mostly funded from government funds. There you go. Open source usually start there. But now, you know, we want to take it up and see how we can get also professionals. And it's also sponsored by a bigger company, a big lease company, a big bank, and Logica, a big software developer. We'll show an electric powertrain, a lamppost charger, and far more. And we try to make something work, and that's really an invitation to you guys. If you want a driving prototype,
you can get what was the river
display. Oh, the river display. I can't explain quite correctly, I think. No, where is it? Here. This display enables you to do in your car what you want. And it's mostly based, sometimes you want to drive to the car. It's fun sometimes. So then the seat will become upright, you get the steering wheel will go towards you, and you get only the information on this display that is needed to drive. So your rev counter, for example, or this kind of indication, false counter, will be in display very large. You can also sit back a bit and do some other stuff. You're driving but not actively. At that point, the steer will go backward a bit, and the river display also shows some other things like the route you're trying to go and the speed you're going at, or maybe traffic jams ahead and stuff like that, the radio station. Even further, you would actually put away your steering probably turn around, and if you turn around, the wind blade also is around here. So you can turn around and still use functions over there. So it's one big display that's why it's looks like a river that you can use in a graphic. Just one of the ideas, if you have a better one, contribute. One other proof concept, look at common.org. We appreciate it. Subscribe. There is a platform going online and the other right to enable people to upload their stuff. This is a big issue. To talk about technology that enables this. You need people that know computer-aided design software. You need a whole new platform than a wiki. You can discuss a car and a wiki, that is just too difficult. So we are hesitating and guess with that how that should work, but we're not there yet. We're not there yet at all. And ConFit garages, because it is online that does enable this and does make that I'm here, for example, but it is personal contact that makes it happen. That's why this happens. People come together and meet each other. That's what we do regularly. And it grows every time. It's really cool. In the summer we'll be doing a big one probably and try to weld a car together. But it's still ambitious. But come to a garage, you can find the announcements on the website and come visit and get your input there. And we don't need input from only car designers or car engineers, but maybe you know how to make a bus system in a car. Maybe you can make the new software platform, also software platform for car information systems. Maybe you can just get it onto the market, write a business plan, do the marketing, I don't know. Maybe you can just write, put Slovenian and translate it on the website. Everything is very well. Thank you. I think that's enough. I guess there's a question. Here you go. Wait, I'll turn this around a bit.
Well, first of all, I wonder if you could say more about the community aspect. You said it were mostly students now, but are there also volunteers, and how is that organized, and what is happening, what has happened?
It started off as a student project. I was one of them. Now I'm one of the volunteers, actually. And what we saw is that it remained a student project for a while because it was really organized a bit as a project, really top down. And now things are changing a bit because people that are used to think in project ways, also in universities and foundations for nature and environment, for example, but also big companies, they start to get it now. So there's going to be a foundation, and the community already developed a bit. We now have artists that in their free time just come by, but also a lot of people from business, any business, banks, accounting, I don't know, all the government, they were very interested in how this develops and also are contributing already, but it is limited still. We really have difficulties in getting it truly an open source community because it started off as a top-down sport project. But we started with an assignment to build a car, and that is something that is usually very difficult.
Okay, so there's going to be basically a totally remote control possibility, and that's feasible?
It's not remote control, self-control. It is feasible.
Yeah, self-control.
Yeah, it is feasible. You have some issues which are partly solved, but for example, the systems are implemented at this point. Mercedes-Benz, what I talked about, has a lateral and a longitudinal system that allows you both to brake and accelerate based on your surrounding. So there's a car in front of you that brakes, the car will brake also. And the lateral movement is, it looks at cars in front of you and the lines on the road will keep you within your lane and can even change lanes.
So you're talking about this absolutely a totally new infrastructure? So
no, it's based on the same infrastructure.
Okay, but every single car in that case has to be...
No. Well, this car can decide what is my distance to my, the guy in front of me and can brake when the distance comes too small.
Okay, well, I'm not getting the fact, but every car will have to be in the common infrastructure system.
No. If I'm a single car and I have the system in place and I just put my hands there, let's start in the traffic jam on the freeway, just to give you an idea. We're in the traffic jam on the freeway. What I usually do there is just sit there, and sometimes... And when I do it based on what the guy in front of me does. Well, the system can do it.
Yeah.
On a bit higher speed, you can do it also.
I mean, what about the data then after? I mean, perhaps the car follow its traffic path?
Based on image recognition.
So you can just work on the road marking.
Yeah, I can work on the line markings, yeah.
I mean, you don't need, okay, I would think that the only way to implement is by having some kind of markers along every single road.
Well, there are.
Yeah, but...
But, sure, there is, you need, you cannot do it everywhere, but on the main freeways, for example, in the Netherlands, and in Germany, and in France, and you can do it easily. Yeah, because there are lines beside it.
This is written especially for cars, for instance, has been a computer vision has been developed since many years or so. And they are quite good at have already autonomous cars which are driving some arbitrary landscape, not roads which are better controlled systems, side and road and they are very good at this.
DARPA challenge.
That's not the problem.
And that's a point.
But that's also not the solution. It is not. This is one of the services you could offer based on open source cars. This is one thing that would allow you to have a selling point. I would offer a service to your employees to work in their car, which is very, very valuable. And that's what it's about. Also, that one you do understand or do get normally as technologically feasible is to let someone order something and put it in your car in a box. That's simple, but it's added value.
You said something perhaps for some of the system. It could be any once every 3 years we could be able to almost just chuck away some of these parts. So,
yeah.
So the car that you were showing us the picture of. The full size one.
Yeah.
I mean, the shell of that then, is that sort of you can just compost that?
Not yet. No, that is also another problem. Now, you could actually do that. You could. We know several ways of doing it already.
Yeah.
For example, you could use cotton as for the outside. The simple, just as they make planes, they used to make planes. And you just put a fabric around a sort of frame made of, for example, wood, you can just throw it away. Even change the frame. Other examples are new plastics that are invented in, also in the Netherlands, I know, that are made of purely, what's it called?
I've seen them out of cornstarch.
I've
seen plastics made out of cornstarch.
Yeah, stuff like that. And the cool thing is, the problem with these plastics is that they are sensitive to moisture. So after a year or three, that's why they don't use them in cars now. That has to last for 20 years, the exterior of the car. But you can use perfectly for cars like this. But after a year or three, four, five, it will suck itself full of water and will expand and crack open and become ugly. That's why they don't use it now in cars. But for us, no problem. Great, make it exactly 3 years and then drops out. So there are these, the downsides of these materials are actually no problem for us.
Who's there? You talk about the engine.
Yeah, well, shortly, I think. But when we designed it in 2006, it's all hydrogen, which is probably an option, maybe, or somewhere in the future. We've talked, we were guys visiting us in a garage, and we like to make it on condensed air. So you just compress air, and you run an engine on it. Mm-hmm. As an engineer, I'd say it will work, but let them. And the current one is electric.
Yeah.
Fueled electric, yeah. Full electric has the downside that it will only drive for 150 kilometers, but the upside is that most people do. And it would actually provide a service for people that want to go further. So you would actually make them probably do an incentive in it to drive a smaller car for a daily commuting, for example. Mm-hmm. And you offer to those people specifically. And then if they would like to go on vacation with the car, which a lot of people don't do anymore, you get a station over.
Another question, another question for me. A few weeks ago I saw documentation, TV documentation about a system of cars which run on electric,
yeah,
and which are used for storing electric power.
Yeah. In the project there's a big other institute involved that does research the effect of electric transportation on the network level,
yeah,
in which if you have, for example, a lot of sustainable sources, like a renewable source like wind energy, you have huge overcapacity sometimes. If it really blows, really storms, you can let those things run, but then the energy won't go nowhere because people won't turn on their washing machines just then. So you can store all this energy in electric cars. There's a huge buffer there. And you can actually filter out a small variation also, which is great because you can, if you have to run a big coal or nuclear power plant, which you already have, then run it twice as efficiently. You don't need to build a new one. Because it doesn't have to cope with the fluctuations. It's now built with peak demand. And you can now level down these peak demands and can be far more efficient.
More comment, more question. A lot of the folks in the US are looking at how the car companies are failing right now, and because we're already investing lots of money in people now controlling shares of large corporations, asking Obama and the administration to consider changing the ownership of the patents and the license and the patents of the corporations, because this will, in effect, supercharge small business to provide remanufacturing services, or localized manufacturing, locally sourced manufacturing services for currently, heavy hierarchy systems.
Yeah.
Where people can actually do full stream management. And it's not just me, not just crazy open source guy who shows up at the conference. It's actually a lot of people who have touched the economy, the peer production economy, they understand this in a lot of ways. But based on that, though, have you considered, and I mean, I think that this is just one of the questions that are coming up over the weekend, so I'm asking too, have you considered taking all of your know-how and all of your current capacity and just directing it like a laser at some vulnerable component that is already in sort of the process of distribution, and just taking control of that as a revenue source to fund the development of the second one?
What would we want?
An air conditioner. Control air conditioning technology. Start with a full-scale production, manufacturing, remanufacturing, distribution, servicing for a component that's already in a deployed auto. And then begin with that and then apply it to the rest of it instead of, I'm not going to deride the new birth of the new system. But that in itself, as long as the core of it, it doesn't matter. You're still going to drive on the roads that are maintained by, chaotic, bureaucratic, ossified functionaries. Yeah. You're not changing.
I considered it.
You can do one piece of it.
Yeah,
but that's totally own that.
No, that won't change it. The whole way the system is built at this point
the original equipment manufacturer, which is, for example, Ford General Motors, is owning the ads of everyone else, which is, they have very much money invested in the distribution and sales of loads of cars a year. And they have invested a lot of money in assembling and in getting together cars at numerous rates. All cars, most cars, 95%, are built to be sold on that level. If you are trying to change one part of it, you never get in. You just never get in. You won't. People don't want to change their air conditioner. They want a car that drives and is cool. You don't have a selling point there. You only have a selling point if you really change the ability. And what I'm now focusing my laser beam at is niche markets. I'm looking at which market to start. I'm now looking at 4x4s, for example, in offshore industry. You have these offshore companies, they have small compounds of 3 square kilometers or something, and guys drive around there with these big Jeeps. They don't need them, they can do it electrically, and they pay $1,200 a month for it. That's leverage. I would like to design a 4x4 open source to do that, and start from there, maybe. But I don't think that an air conditioner or a wheel hub or anything like that will make a difference because people are changing.
Well, not to totally argue with you, but disaggregation of delivery chains and the entire assembly process is one of the operating challenges. It's not something that you can necessarily avoid. You're doing the same thing, you're just doing it in a you're doing it with a vertical perspective in a target market.
Yeah.
The target edge.
Yeah.
But you're not really doing anything different, I'm just saying.
I'm doing it different because I use open source.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, so anyone can do the vertical integration.
Yeah, so let me ask you one question about the license though. So for example, an alternator on a Ford product,
yeah.
Is there a patent on like where the fucking screws are in the thing? Or can you just, you could make one, right? There's no license or patent that says if you make an alternator that fits on these 4 screws, you owe us or something like that, right?
No, but no one wants to have an alternator. People want to have a car. I'm thinking from demand, actually. And I think you should use added value services to deliver that. If you can think of a component of a car that would do that,
yeah.
I mean,
well, your target market niche strategy is not what's effective in China to remanufacture motorcycles. It's location and demand, and it's only if they're remanufacturing brake parts and all kinds of things like that. But it's parts. It's not whole niche sectors.
Yeah, tell me about your budget, your working budget.
I wouldn't know. Brain capital, right? That's what it's about.
But as far as parts and locations, any of that? Was that one part or the other?
Yeah. I think it cost I think total budget there was more than 100,000 euros. I'm not sure. Paid by sponsors, governments.
I mean, for prototyping right now, do you have a steady stream or is
it? No, not steady, no steady stream, just problem. No.
So it's an issue that you can ask prototypes from being made?
Yeah, for part, yeah. I just need a big investor.
Yeah.
First, we need a sugar daddy probably to make a working prototype, because otherwise, a big investor won't drop in. But General Electric Plastics, one of the problems why we didn't use the good plastics yet, paid for the exterior mock-up. But hey, help me and get the message across.
So you're able to convince people in the mainstream right now to support a very far-thinking project.
Yeah. Think about the suppliers, the supply chain of the automotive.
Yes.
These guys would really like it. Because they make twice as much money. Now they're owned, their ass is owned by all the guys around the original equipment manufacturers, the ass is owned by these original equipment manufacturers.
Are you concerned about them being proprietary? Or are you going to get all that open source?
I'm not really concerned, because you don't have to be concerned with open source. They cannot really harm you. There is no thing. But what I hope.
No, but supply and availability, that's one
No, I don't have to control anything. It will control itself, probably. And if I want to deliver a product, myself as a company, then I have to control it. But in the community, you don't have to control it. What I hope is that these original equipment manufacturers, one of them at least, will consider, let's do this. And make
so the challenge becomes generating the community.
Yeah, generating the community.
I think, as I said before, some of these things sounds like quite glossy, maybe color, next century, magazine, and red kind of ideas. And I mean, it's not the technical sign, but it's at least what leads us to get a very open school.
Yeah.
So, so this could be a more critical remark. And then the first question of how, if you see some kind of natural connection between the fact that it's open source and it's sustainable, do I read that kind of argument? And the second thing is that, and this connects to the business model thing you were saying, that, because when you said that you come in and you change the chassis every 4 years, and it sounds very much like the mobile phone market, and there as well, there are in these glossy magazines, stories how we will live in a paperless society, we will not travel because we will make phone calls. And what we see now is the kids are changing their mobile phones one by each half year. So with these old, very expensive, long-lasting cars we had before, okay, so the first consumer uses for 3 years, but then they sell it to second-hand market and then to the third-hand market and so on. So there is some kind of sustainability. It seems to me that the kind of efficiency which you gain one level will be eaten up by a very much rapid obsolete.
Thank you for one question. First of all, open source, why it is intrinsically sustainable, I think, is because you focus on the service. So the service you provide with it. To give you an example, which I give more often. Let's give another one. This also answers your second question. The mobile phone A, does not phone better than phone B, or more efficient. So a mobile phone operator does not have any incentive to make you reuse your phone. It does not make their thing efficient. It's even the other way around. They invent even more fast internet, so they have to make more investments in their infrastructure. So mobile phone is a bad example for this. It looks very similar, but I have talked to guys at Xerox. Xerox pays per copy. That was their business case. So you make a copy, you pay 1 cent. What they did is they would provide you with the machine that did that. And what they found out after a while, they got after 3 years, 2 years, got the machine back. And it was full of a lot of valuable parts. So they decided to remanufacture that thing. Just an economic decision. And they would put a new front on it. People would think it was a new one. But it was still, they wouldn't mind because they would pay per copy. And that machine became intrinsically more efficient, of course. Because, yeah, you would pay per copy, so it wouldn't really matter what happened inside. As long as it was more efficient, you would have less ink, better, etc., etc. It was their incentive. And that's what I mean with open source. If you focus on the business as a service instead of selling things is intrinsically non-sustainable. So mobile phones are still sold with a financial construction, but still sold. Cars are also still sold. But these copies were sold. And that was a service, actually. There's not even a copy that was sold. So washing machines, same issue. You could, in China, they now don't buy washing machines, they rent them per laundry. But you would, it's all about the business model in that case. But if you get this business model by freeing up the source, because then you cannot sell it anymore. They can sell it if you don't have a business. That's why it's not sustainable, I think.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's very interesting to be something
even now work from this conference instead. It was worth having it. But it's interesting that you talked of Oscar, because at the first Tribune's conference we had Markus Mersen there,
okay,
the guy from Oscar, and at that time Oscar was just born, and he was very enthusiastic about that project, but as you say, maybe France knows better, that the project somehow died.
It was too early.
Yeah, I don't know about the reasons, but what I have still in mind is the talk which Markus Merz gave at that time. And he said the car industry is very, very interested in this particular project, for instance, because they have an image how the car of say Audi or Mercedes-Benz have to look like, and they are not able to produce such a small car. Maybe Mercedes-Benz is small, something like that. And what Matt said at this time, that the car industry was very interested to have, well, maybe a vendor for a design for such a small car, so they can build it. Does it change?
No, it didn't really change. I'll give you the example of SmartWell. SmartWell was followed by the guy from the Swatch. Fortunately. He had a business concept. Pretty much this one. They would change around the exterior of the car, they would only use it, and it would be electric. And he developed a specific market, they laser beamed into the city, and actually had an online gun to get the whole city of Paris within the PhD, car free for a non-electric car. Almost had it done. So it was this one investor that actually built three of these glass towers in Paris for that reason. The whole trouble began when Daimler Chrysler, which was first, I think first was, which one was in it? I think Ford or something. They sold it. Then Daimler Chrysler went in, and the guy from Ford was 50-50, but he couldn't carry the costs anymore. Then Daimler Chrysler took it over and thought, no, we're not going to do this. We're going to build a car. We're going to sell it. They did it all the other way around again, and they made it not electric, but they would do it in a normal combustion engine. They would just sell it, and that's why it is seen as a difficult thing. They thought, if we bring a new car to the market, the first year, the first month, we sell the most of them. And after a while, it goes down, and after 3 years, we facelift, and we sell a bit more. That's how cars go. But with new cars, with new things, it goes very slowly in the beginning, and after a while, it catches up. See, freeze. And that's what they didn't get. So they totally messed up the project. Totally messed it up. Had all the chances, they had everything in a goal. It would now be the number one electric player in the world if they had done it right. But they didn't dare.
The other question is who contributes to your project?
Already.
Again, I have the talk of Markus Mertz in mind. Markus Mertz at that time said, well, we just started the project and all of a sudden, engineers, car engineers, said, oh, well, this is the project I wait for. Well, I want to be engaged in that project.
I tried to reach him.
Yeah,
I sent him a mail, he didn't reply. But this should be one project. You should get those guys.
Well, I did a lot of follow-up. And I came to the conclusion, either it's totally unserious or it's a hoax of the kind. It was really, for me, it was a personal disappointment. One day he came to me and said, you know why we can't build it? Because we don't have a design system. I'm going to Romania to ask some designers, to pay some designers, to build a kind of community tool that can handle different complex aspects of the whole thing. But it was never, the problem was never publicly discussed. They said, no, the car industry, we smash us, we destroy us if we discuss that problem.
And so it was weird.
Yeah, we're not building this platform. I'm not very fond of it, but
you are building it. But
we have Logica has put a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
Same amounts you just mentioned. To build a platform where you can share all these things based on open source software partly. I'm not fully open source yet, but yet, hey, that's how it works a bit. We have to get them around. But there is, in effect, I think, Tuesday, a platform online on which you can share different things.
Does anybody have access?
You can have access to it. You can access to it.
Well, this is really fascinating because it's
and really provide feedback. Because I've seen it. I've actually guided the graduate that designed it and got Logica to invest in this project. Got to work at Logica, and I was doing that for a living. So it exists. You can do what you want for a living, but it is not
instant. I'm just blogging your story at +100. With the intention, because with the German community they have most confidence in the field, because there is a university in Aachen behind it, or another.
Yeah,
it was originated by Richard Bergman, who wanted to build on that electric car story. And it was very unprofessionally originated, but it's seeming to go exactly in the direction of the mobility concept. And so I think if there was a little bit more visibility, there would be a tremendous inflow of development capacities into your product from Germany or from Austria.
Right.
Because I linked across 100 people to electric car nerds all over Austria.
So we should really get into contact with Markus Messer. I know he's good. I have tried to meet him. He never replied. Would really be good,
yeah,
at least to get all the email addresses from the people from that time.
That's important.
Yeah, to do to well, so send them a mail at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if one half of the email address is not worth anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that would be great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it would be great.
Maybe you can have better contact about this, right?
I can call him, but the problem is you call him. The problem is there was no clear vision behind this project. Absolutely no vision. And it seems that we have learned a lesson from all this. And it is now so important to capitalize. This is a major issue for not only the open source car community.
That's the most cited
thing. So, and there are so many aspects of this that have been discussed in the Bergman area. Like how can we start winning corporate into small workshops, car workshops, to consider working with our product. And I think this is something to be, this is not coming after the project. It's coming, it should come right now. Okay, we have the concept of remanufacturing these cars, and it's not going to happen in a large factory, it's going to happen in your local workshop with a franchise of common. What I miss is this public communication on the point. Only Dutch is a problem, and it should be at least in English.
Yeah. I think the website is now at least translated partly, but
Still not up. I just checked.
You just checked?
There is no English version.
No, we just changed websites, that's the problem.
There's a Dutch version, but not an English version.
No, I know, there is an English version, but it's
not. I went to part of the English one the other day.
Yeah.
I went to it a month ago, because I experienced the English version.
No. Help us! Okay. Anyone knows Dutch? Then English?
I think it's about time that not to be too small of marks that I've been by the people.
And let's go meet some of you guys, I'm starving.
Okay. Hey, what about Hugo Stowers from England, the UK Astra project? Have you ever contacted him?
I've tried to contact all open source projects I could find in 2006, and I think I'm pretty well aware of all of them now, but I did not try to contact them anymore, most of them, because the previous one didn't really catch on. But maybe this one is again get me in touch. I'll be trying to get me in touch.
I've been working with Marshall a little bit about around how to find or what services to provide corporate sponsors. And I wondered what of your presentation and your vision you, I mean, please exclude all of the government grants because not every country is like most governments.
I really love yours. You wouldn't know how tough it is. It's a tough lot. Government funds are not fine.
I have several friends though who have received them for things that are far less important. So, not to talk little of them, but mostly around these corporate partnerships, and you know, what are you? What did you engage in? What work did you do that produced the thing that they saw as important enough to invest? I mean, that is that a fair description of the process?
People.
They saw the people.
I started regulating on this project, and halfway I started to think in which traditional business would profit from it, would be good. So I went to the big lease company in Denmark, and I could go directly into business with them, and they became head sponsor. And they were taken over by the big monetary bank, so they were also
head sponsors for them in their
company. Parties. They're now a big investment. And Rebelbank was large on the Netherlands. And Logica, same way. He's got graduated from a project called which company reports from this, went to Logica, got in, got a job. And it went the same with Flips. Flips the interior, supported interior design, General Electric. Graduate at General Electric. We just get these students, or we get together as we got together as students and get these students to first think about this project and about what it means, and then think about what partner would fit. And not the other way around, so not working partners, but I think that works. And another thing works is just we being the news pretty much.
Were the corporations you dealt with in the Netherlands?
Yeah. That's also the problem.
There's some very big differences between the mentality of the leadership and corporations in the Netherlands and the US and other
countries. If you were to list the 5,000 tools in your mind.
Okay, I understand that question. I could tell you that how recently that the project was on Meet again. It was a news article, not so recent, 2016.
Right.
Which one, but Joe is looking for a panel.
Yeah,
I've
read the report.
Everybody laughing.
Well, just on that note, I mean, this new Tim database thing where people can collaborate, I mean, is the idea that you're loading the blueprints into it and version control the blueprints, it's not about theme for the icon card, it's about wide open blueprint version control. That's
my intention, okay. And it still is not there yet, but at least we're starting. Okay. It's more than a meeting.
I mean, I had the same experience with the SketchUp 3D warehouse.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an explosion of collaboration around that. SketchUp will eventually evolve into There's two.
Yeah, but they're not doing that. I know there are three actually, but they're all crappy. You need something to add engineering.
Well, they're all free.
True.
Sorry.
But I can't do anything by myself.
One of the first things I teach people who work for me is how to use torrents.
And spread the word.
Yeah, I stay in Amsterdam, just west of Olympia.
West of?
Vondelpark.
Huh? That's nice. How did you arrange that?
It's just where I live.
Well, that's not just where we live, that's quite okay.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, no,